The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan!
Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the frozen heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert. Welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. You know what? Today is the 20th of January, and it is the official swearing-in day of our President of the United States. But being a Sunday, he says, no, no, we'll do this one today, but tomorrow I'll have a public display of
grandiosity,
magnitudeness that will just shock you all,
exactly.
Making me the four-time sworn-in president.
That's right. The official ceremony was held today in private with Supreme Court Justice John Roberts, Chief Justice John Roberts, who I understand this year used a note card. So he didn't blow his lines.
And of course, that was why Obama was sworn in the second time during his first term, because supposedly it had been read wrong or said wrong.
Yes.
I don't know.
He had to get
at
it
least
right,
that was what we were told.
Yeah, and that was the conspiracy theory that was circulating 4 years ago, as you recall.
Well,
he
not?
Really wasn't. He's not officially the president, man. Well, there are other reasons to suggest that that's the case, but whatever.
Oh, listen, if you go in that direction, you can just fill in the blank and add ER to the end of it, and that's what you are.
That's right. You're a inaugurer.
Yeah,
This is he's the first president to be sworn in four times for two terms.
Termer.
You're a term. Yeah. So, anyway, the pomp and circumstance will take place tomorrow, and Lady Gaga will be performing at the inaugural ball.
And you may be surprised to hear this, but neither Derek nor I will be attending. Well, you know, we just didn't want to see Gaga, so there you go.
Nor watching.
Yeah. Of course, we didn't get invited either.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Shock and surprise. Well, so that's the big news here in the United States. And while that's going on, there are things happening around the planet that haven't gotten much attention. There's a situation that was developed in Algeria over the past week that is kind of disturbing.
I saw it reported constantly on BBC News, but I'm not really sure. It didn't seem to make it into the internet versions of local of U.S. papers that I was seeing very much, but it was all over Europe.
Yeah.
And understandably so.
Yeah. And it is, Yahoo News is reporting it, and this is from the AP. So the Associated Press is at least carrying the story. Terrorists took over a natural gas plant located out in the Sahara Desert.
And when you say terrorists, I'm going to assume Islamists.
Yes. And, of course, linked to Al-Qaeda, whatever that means. Anyone who appears to be Arab and holding an AK-47 is somehow linked to Al-Qaeda by the news.
Or if you just hold an AK-47.
Yeah. Isn't this interesting? The plant was stormed about a week ago, and there were hundreds of workers at this plant. Now, it's in a very remote area, but the Algerian military, apparently following a doctrine that they've or protocol that they've developed in years past, which is basically if the terrorists threaten us with something, we just send in the military. We do not negotiate.
They need killing.
So according to government sources in Algiers, 32 militants were killed and 23 hostages.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, 32 and 23.
Well, the articles I'm reading say it could be as many as, 88 or something like that?
There will probably be more because Algerian special forces have gone into the plant now, apparently, and it's the death toll, you're right, is over 80 now. So, but the initial reports were,
32 and 23. Interesting. This is a gas refinery. Mm-hmm. Am I right in that?
A natural gas plant, yeah.
And it's owned by BP, and the other owner was...
State Oil from Norway.
Norway.
And there's a third owner, and I can't pronounce it. I think the it's a joint venture, the Algerian state.
Is it connected to France in any way? Because I know that originally, last week, the person speaking out about this and revealing it to the world, so to speak, was Hollande, the president of France.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I had that information here in the article.
Well, he had been talking about whether or not France was going to intervene in the hostage crisis taking place in Algiers. This is also very possibly connected to Islamist activity in Mali. And if you don't know where that is, it's in that little curve in Africa that looks like it used to fit
into South America. Right.
On western part of Africa.
Yeah, so the French are in Mali again, and it appears to be... I'm not really competent to speak on what's going on there. I just, it's kind of odd seeing another European former colonial power going and, you know, sending troops back into.
It really isn't. And what it looks like to me, and this is going back to the so-called Arab Spring, is that Europe and, well, we'll say Western nations, Western, maybe even corporations, are trying to take over Northern Africa.
Yeah, and America is not exempt from that because it was reported by the Washington Post. What's the date of the article here? Washington Post reporting. As we get the slower, slower machine here. The Washington Post has reported that America, the United States, has sent 100 military trainers.
Yeah.
Trainers.
Air quotes.
To six nations that will contribute troops to a pan-African force being prepared for deployment to Mali. This was according to a release from the U.S. Department of State on Friday, January 18th. The initial U.S. trainers will discuss training and equipping and deployment needs of those countries in the interest of getting them ready to go into Mali.
Mm-hmm.
The training mission in Niger, Nigeria, Burkina Faso, Senegal, Togo, and Ghana is the largest U.S. involvement to date in preparations for the African force, which is being assembled by the 15-nation Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS.
This doesn't come out of, you know, just nowhere, because this, the strategy for this goes way back to the Bush administration when the Africa Command was begun, which was around 2004, 2005, yeah. Somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. So we now will have trainers deployed as advisors to this pan-African military force in Mali. But remember, we also have special forces, unless something has changed. I've not seen an update on this, but our special forces deployed in Congo chasing down Joseph Kony.
Mm-hmm. Well, the funny thing about the name Kony is that that is actually the name of a city in Mali, K-O-N-N-Y.
Hmm.
And it has supposedly, it was very much in the news, at least on BBC News last week. As you may know, if you've listened to us for a while, Derek and I did get rid of our cable entirely.
Mm-hmm.
But we have access to the news through the Roku box that we have. So using the internet as our source, as our vendor, so to speak, we watch BBC News and CNN International and even RT, Russia Today, which has an American version. All of these have viewpoints that... are really not necessarily independent.
Right.
In other words, they are told in many cases what to say. But BBC News was reporting, talking with someone who is from the Mali area, a European, he seemed to be, but we're not talking about an African native, but he was speaking about this town of Kony, and he said that the word was that the Mali troops, in other words, the government army, had resisted and beaten back the Islamist terrorists, the insurgents. He claimed that, and I wish I could tell you his name, but I'm sorry I didn't write it down, but this gentleman was claiming that there is no such thing
As a Mali.
As a Mali.
Military.
Military. Mm-hmm. Now, he was perhaps saying that tongue-in-cheek, but he was saying that what you read about this action in the newspaper, in the AP, and other sources like that may not necessarily be true. Well, we've been telling you that for years, mm-hmm. that what you read in the newspapers and what you hear the anchors reading from their news on television may not necessarily be true. And that really comes down to the big question. Here we sit, you and I, Derek, you and I, sitting here in our little comfortable, quote-unquote, bunker, which is actually one of the bedrooms in our house.
Yeah.
We sit here looking at the beautiful trees that we know are real. We are sitting here looking at our dachshund that we know is real. But these bits and bytes that come in on the internet and tell us, give us information, how do we know that's real? How do we know that's true?
Yeah. They're... It may not be as blatant as what we saw in the movie Wag the Dog, but there certainly is some element of showmanship that takes place. We've seen this really demonstrated clearly in the protests, for example, for the protests that took place in Iran around the time of the last presidential election, with all of the manipulation manipulation of Twitter,
mm-hmm.
for the purposes of swinging world opinion one way or the other,
right? Getting people to show up at one spot at the same time.
Well, also, but
through Twitter,
but putting out a particular slant on the news on what was
true.
Happening,
supposedly people on the ground,
right? We have no way of knowing for sure.
You don't.
Going on. But and yet there are large media outlets in the United States that have dedicated employees who sit and monitor Twitter feeds and try to mine Twitter feeds for news.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can you
And here's
verify?
The funny thing. I have watched CNN and even, you know, Fox, you know, what you can name the news source, mm-hmm. on television and even through internet connections. You can name a news source, and many of them say, well, you know, we monitor Twitter and we monitor Facebook and we monitor these social media sites because that's the raw news as it comes in. Those are the people who live in the areas, and that's the stuff you can really, you know, sink your teeth into, and you know that's true.
It's unfiltered.
Well, I'm sorry, but you don't know that's true.
Exactly right. Especially when the State Department has admitted to training people in social media in other parts of the world. In other words, training activists on how to use social media, not just to get people together for a protest at a specific time and a specific date, but to put out versions of the story that you want the rest of the world to believe in order to get world opinion on your side. That's really where a lot of the battle is taking place. It's for the hearts and minds of people outside the conflict. You want them to view you as the good guys so that you will wind up on the winning side of the public opinion war, which can be very valuable when it comes to how settlements are reached,
mm-hmm.
To how much power, how much of a share of the power you're given when the shooting stops. As far as we're concerned in the Western world, for example, Bashar Assad in Syria is a brutal dictator who is murdering his own people. Well, how do we know that? The only news sources that we're seeing are the are things that are vetted by the Western media and typically quoting people who want Assad out of office.
Now, understand, we're not saying the opposite.
Right.
We're not saying he's the good guy in all this. We're
absolutely not.
But it's just question everything.
Right.
How do we know?
How
do I know you're real? I do.
Now we're starting to get into some.
I know. Well, I'm sorry. I got my tinfoil hat right over here, and I'm just going to slap it on my head, and I have to ask, how do we know anything is real?
Well, I may be hooked up
to a bunch of goo somewhere for all I know.
Answer in a tank. Yes,
yeah.
This is the Matrix. But the point being that what's being reported and what we're consuming as news is filtered through various layers, and you don't always know the agenda of those who are doing the filtering, the editing. And obviously we do the same thing. We filter and edit things that we think are important, and we put our own perspective on things. And admittedly, our perspective is those of Bible believing Christians in the affluent United States. Our perspective is going to be shaped by our upbringing, by the people we live around, mm-hmm. The culture in which we live. We would have a different perspective, I'm sure, if we were living in and had been raised in, a remote province of China or, somewhere south of the equator, anywhere south of the equator, practically. so take that into account when you hear us say anything. All we're doing is, you know, just when you see these news reports coming out of Syria or Egypt or Libya or wherever, telling us that such and such is a bad guy. Well, you know, step back for a second and say, okay, who benefits from the removal of this person from power? Who benefits from, us? The news that Islamic militants are overrunning Mali, so that we need to send troops into Mali, or that the United States needs to send troops into Congo.
Well, I'm glad you said that. Now, let me ask you a question that I didn't tell you in advance that I was going to ask you. So I apologize for putting you on the spot. But what is the advantage to the Western nations to control Northern Africa?
Well, I was doing a little digging in the background here while you were talking a couple of minutes ago. And to be honest with you, I don't know that I've got an answer yet. I do know that there are oil resources in Mali. Don't know how extensive. Article from Reuters in late 2011, October of 2011, that the Algerian state energy company Sonatrach, which is the other party in that natural gas plant, along with BP and the Norwegian state oil, or mm-hmm. Stat oil, however they pronounce it, they were going to begin drilling in Mali in the middle of 2012. So they secured rights to explore for oil in Mali, but development of that region was slow because that area has been was overrun by gunmen. This was reported about 18 months ago. So it could be that this Algerian situation and the Mali situation, since the two countries are neighbors, are connected, and that the militants in Algeria are somehow connected to the militants in Mali, and that the French and Brits are going in there hoping maybe for a share of the goodies.
And Africa is, you know, we've called it this before. So and if it sounds, if it sounds crude, forgive me for that, but this is, I really think, the truth. Many big nations, the Western nations, the United States, many European nations, as well as China, and perhaps even other Eastern nations, Russia, for one, view Africa in many ways as a big mall. Not Mali, but mall, M-A-L-L, a shopping mall.
Right.
This is where they go to get their minerals. This is where they go to get their oil. This is where they go to get their natural gas. And in many cases, this is where they go to exploit workers.
You know, if we look at history,
diamond mines, places like that.
We look to history for some guidance as to what may be happening now. I just stumbled onto an interesting podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I've been listening to it a lot.
One you would highly recommend, I think, for those looking for a new podcast.
It's really interesting stuff. It's by a fellow named Dan Carlin, C-A-R-L-I-N, and I don't know Dan Carlin or what his background is.
You should ask him on your show.
But yes, I we'll make a note. Interview Dan Carlin.
George Carlin.
Yeah. His podcast is called Hardcore History. And what he does is takes a topic and he will devote four or five, in some cases, just, you know, a single podcast. But the podcast will run, the individual episodes will run anywhere from an hour and a half to, there have been a couple that have run as long as 5.5 hours. So it's almost like listening to an audiobook delivered in a conversational style about a particular topic. In one case, he took the Mongolian Empire and did a series called Wrath of the Khans, and dealt with the expansion of the Mongol Empire from Genghis Khan through Kublai Khan. Another, he did the decline and fall of the Roman Republic, not the Roman Empire, but the Roman Republic, which is the period from about 150 BC to about the time of Caesar, Julius. Caesar Augustus. Yeah, Julius, really. And it was the series on the Roman Republic that I thought was especially enlightening. One of the reasons that the Roman Republic expanded as much as it did into Asia Minor, up against the borders of the Persian Empire, into the Middle East, the Holy Land, into Egypt, North Africa, into Britain, was because of the rise of the equestrian class, the patrician class. Those were the old houses that had ruled Rome since the days of the Roman kings, and and continued to dominate Roman politics after the last Roman king was deposed. But then there was a business class that were called the equestrians, knights. It wasn't because they rode horses necessarily, but because that's just what they were called. Anyway, and the patricians, even though they were wealthy landowners who owned, these vast estates and tracts of land, and benefited from that, they considered it beneath them to sully their hands with commerce, to actually, engage in importing the olive oil, that kind of thing.
I'm busy eating and throwing up. Leave me alone.
Exactly. As the equestrian class grew in power and influence, they wanted new business opportunities. And when you went into Anatolia and took over the kingdom of Pergamum or whatever, suddenly, all of the loot from that kingdom was now at your disposal. And it also opened up all of those markets to you that you didn't have access to before because of the closed borders. So the Roman Empire expanded in order to expand trade opportunities for the business classes. Well, guess what? When you start looking at what the United States has done, and not just the United States, but also the Brits going back, the West Indies or the East India Company and things like that. Many of our ventures in foreign nations, much of our foreign policy over the last 150 years, roughly, maybe 100 years for sure, into Central and South America, Hawaii, the Middle East, have been dictated by our equivalent of the equestrian class, guys who want new markets, whether it's for oil or for, in the case of the previous century, fruit or sugar or what have you. There's a real striking parallel between what was going on with the Roman Republic and the transformation of the Republic into the Empire. And that's kind of the stage we're at now. It almost appears to my uneducated view as a fan of history rather than as an historian, that we're witnessing the decline and fall of the American Republic and the transformation of the American Republic into the American Empire.
Oh, I totally agree with you. But what you're saying here is we're not in those other countries to spread democracy.
Sorry.
Too much coffee.
Yes. So, you said, just some things we can learn from history, and especially when you hear Dan Carlin, who I think does a magnificent job of describing the interplay between the key actors in the various histories that he's describing. You hear the politicians of ancient Rome acting just like the politicians of modern day. Well, wherever, Europe, America, wherever, nothing new under the sun. So, yeah.
Amen to that.
Look up Hardcore History, a wonderful podcast.
The older I get, the more I love history. I found it pretty boring when I was in high school, but because of the way it was taught. But when I got into college, I fell in love with history. I've been watching documentaries. I don't listen to podcasts very much. I love to watch documentaries, and I've been watching documentaries on the Persian Empire, on the Babylonian Empire, on India. Watched that yesterday, and it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're expanding because essentially their businesses need to expand. They need to expand trade routes and things like that. So they send news to the king, and the king takes off, and he and his knights or whatever, they take over. Mm-hmm. And many of the wars that have been fought, I would say probably all of the wars that have been fought, are not over spreading democracy or necessarily defending yourselves against terrorists. It is because we want what you've got.
Exactly. Exactly.
And we want you to want what we've got, as far as trade is concerned. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we want what you've got. And I think that's what's going on in Africa. And it may not just be Northern Africa. But you know what? That Northern Africa you probably know this better than I do with history, but there's something tickling in my brain about something about the Libya area, Tripoli area, and pirates even going back to the 18th century, that the United States was trying to get control of those waters, and mm-hmm. pirates were stopping us from doing it.
Sure. Yeah, the Barbary Coast. The Berbers who controlled that part of Africa. And they were a thorn in the side of the Romans, by the way, going back to the second century
BC. So that area has been, think strategically, if nothing else, that that area is very important.
Right.
There, so there was keep an eye on Northern Africa.
There was a nation there called, I think it was Mauritius back in the day.
There was an island of Mauritius. There still is an island of Mauritius.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look it up now because I've got the name wrong. But anyway, there was a, they rebelled against Rome and, let's see, there was a guy's name was Jugurtha who gave him all kinds of problems back in the day, and then a descendant of his, Numidia. That was the name of the not Mauritia, Numidia.
That sounds like a drug. Take your Numidia.
Does. 60-second commercial, 10 seconds of benefits, 50 seconds of disclaimer may cause. Yeah,
the whole time they're happy and they're skipping, and this may cause death.
Yeah. Anyway, Jugurtha in the 2nd century BC had a. Caused problems with Rome, but there was a descendant of his, and I'm going to have to look at this. In fact, what I need to do is an interview on alternative American history, because there's some speculation amongst some who don't accept the standard history texts of North American history, that some of these Numidians, instead of submitting to Julius Caesar, got in their ships and sailed west. And wound up in the U.S.
And became Melungians.
And became Melungians, right, yes.
So
anyway, a lot of what's going on in Africa may not be connected to just us wanting to develop new markets, but also us wanting to prevent the Chinese from getting their hands on these natural resources. And the Chinese have been buying influence in Kenya and other places in Africa by just going in and building infrastructure. Hey, we'll build this road for you.
We'll build it better and faster.
Yeah, and then, of course, getting access to oil concessions and so forth. So it's the same reason that I think American interests are active in the oil patch of Central Asia. It's not because we need it here in the United States. We've discovered here in the last year or two, although most Americans, the average American doesn't seem to recognize this yet, there's enough oil and natural gas here in the United States to be energy independent. Between what they found in the Bakken Shale Formation of western North Dakota, which may have triple the reserves of the recoverable reserves of what Saudi Arabia has, combined with all the natural gas that they're able to dig out with new technologies, albeit technology that is
fracking
controversial, yes. Right?
And we're not using that in the Battlestar Galactica
sense.
But although we could.
Natural gas. One of the reasons the coal industry is having so much trouble is not just the interference by the EPA, but it's because natural gas is so cheap right now that it makes more sense economically for utility companies to shift their electric production from coal-fired plants to natural gas-fired plants. I actually saw a statistic a couple of months ago that in 2010, the percentage of electricity generated by coal-fired plants in the U.S. was 47%. And by the first half of 2012, that had dropped to about 37%. So as natural gas has gotten cheaper, we just quit using as much coal to generate the electricity that we need. Of course, they'll get us all hooked on natural gas, then they'll jack the prices of natural gas back up, and we're going to be stuck either way. But
somehow those prices don't seem to get passed along to us. Nothing seems to go down in price anymore.
Very true.
Unless, of course, you're shopping at certain stores and they have that little smiley face that says, hey, the price has dropped.
Yeah.
And I'm looking, how do I know the price was that originally? Mm. I wasn't here last week.
Yeah. And just a detour rabbit down a rabbit hole for a second. There's a story that just popped out about the quality of the discount hamburgers that you buy in the UK.
Ah, yes, I'm glad you brought that story up. Thank you very much, sir.
There were some studies that were done on packages of discount hamburger meat from some of the discount grocery chains in the UK and Ireland and
possibly here. They haven't talked about here yet, but come on.
What was the deal? They found like 28% of the bargain burgers was actually horse flesh, horse meat,
or other.
Well, I don't know about
that. Think smaller, more legs.
Yeah. Well, they define meat, beef, another. They define beef differently there. I mean, if it's removed from the bone with a non-mechanical method, in other words, hand stripping it, then that's considered meat. But then if they, I guess there's another process by which they,
That's considered beef.
Power wash it.
But they just call it some sort of MDA, I don't know, add letters, some sort of special type of meat that has to be listed on the packaging if a certain percentage of it is the mechanical, the machine stripped, yeah. Which I assume also gets bone and other things like that in there.
Well, depending on how they do it. I mean, as I understood the article, they were actually removing it from the bone with like a high pressure blast of water, almost like power washing.
Yeah, but are they putting ammonia and things like that?
Well, the pink slime. The one grocery chain mentioned in many of the articles is called Tesco, T-E-S-C-O.
But you would also recognize Aldi. And Aldi was another mentioned stores. We've got a great Aldi around here where I often shop, and you can buy stuff cheap there. But you have to ask yourself, how can they sell this so cheaply?
Tesco is the country's biggest supermarket chain in England. Did not know that.
I didn't know that either.
Well, of course, here in the U.S., we don't pay much attention to it. We're just
worried about where we're getting our stuff. No, here it's Big Blue
Igloo. Yeah.
We all know that.
Sure.
We wish.
We've got regional chains. We don't have any real national
chains. When we were living in Missouri, there was a store there that started with a G that I can't recall the name of, but it turned out that it was owned by Kroger. So we had a little card there that Gerd's or something like that. When we moved to Indiana, suddenly that card worked at the Kroger store. Oh, yeah, that's all the same place.
Well, yeah.
Didn't know.
Yeah, where else? Now, in Indiana, where was the other place we went to? The chain out of Indianapolis that we can't think of it now.
Sorry, Escape don't know what you're talking about.
Of course, Walmart sells groceries at many of their stores now. So Walmart might be considered the nation's largest grocery chain. But anyway, in Britain, 10 million burgers taken off shop shelves after the revelation that beef products from three companies in Ireland and Britain contained horse DNA. Most had only small traces, but one burger of a brand sold by Tesco had meat content that was 29% horse. The grocer told customers, "We and our supplier have let you down, and we apologize."
We totally didn't know it was in there. Yeah. Look, we really, really didn't. I don't know. Gosh.
Yeah. There are many countries in which, eating horse is not a big deal.
And honestly, if you're hungry enough, what does it really matter? I mean, I think it's just that over here, it's not traditionally a consumable product for humans.
Right, right. It's more of a taboo than it is any kind of any real problem with eating the meat.
Yeah, but you should be told up front it's in there.
Exactly.
And the other question is it kosher? I mean, if you're,
don't know if you're, yeah, if you're Jewish, I don't know.
Or if you're Muslim. I mean,
that was.
And if you're Hindu, you're probably not eating it at all. So there you go.
Yeah. What is the deal? I mean, again, if you're buying a hamburger, you assume that it's beef, but there are some food critics in the UK that are just saying, well, what do you expect when you're buying a box of burgers that cost you like, £10 for like a dozen burgers? What do you think you're getting? Come on.
Oh, I've got to make a total left turn here for a story from the science division. Yes, we did. PID Science Division. Haven't you seen that white lab coat? It says PID Labs right there on it. Look, print doesn't lie.
Dr. Bunsen Honeydew?
Yes.
No, that's a
me, me.
He's trademarked.
Hunson Bunnydew.
Ah, there we go.
NASA laser beams send Mona Lisa to the moon and back. Here's the story. An image of the Mona Lisa has traveled nearly 240,000 miles digitally, going from the next-gen satellite laser ranging station at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, to the Lunar Orbiter Laser Altimeter, LOLA. It's an instrument on NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, and it's transmitting the image on top of laser pulses regularly sent in order to track the position. Simultaneous laser communication and tracking was achieved. They're somehow using this digital image transmission to determine tracking position. Now, don't know why, but as I was reading this, I imagined aliens who were monitoring the transmissions from Earth. And one of them finally said, "This is it! This this is apparently what the Earth people look like. We can infiltrate them now. We will all pretend to look like this moaning Lisa. Suddenly, Mona Lisa.
Mona Lisa clones appear all over the globe.
We're just shopping here at the Aldi.
For your delicious horse burgers.
We've come trillions of miles for them. Oh, good heavens. A day.
It's almost the high-tech equivalent of making big shadow puppets on the moon.
By the way, the moon and Jupiter are going to conjoin. They're going to be in conjunction tomorrow. Ooh. During the Obama administration. So I'm a-wondering, well, Lady Moon meets King Jupiter.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have some kind of a little
some kind of sort of a working somewhere. Yeah, that's an interesting thought. We didn't really do any research on that.
No, I really didn't.
And again,
I'm just
it's not something that we put any stock in, but
no,
just knowing that
don't.
There are occultists out there who may.
Yes. And that's the whole D of PID. It's peering into darkness. And the reason we say that is because we not only take a look at politics, but we also look at the dark occult organizations, let's put it that way.
Try not to be ignorant of the enemy's devices.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. We try to look behind the enemy's front lines, try to infiltrate, so to speak. And we do this by reading scripture. Mm-hmm. We read the news. We read everything we can get our hands on, to be honest with you. We read a lot of things that you would probably say, I'd never have that in my house. But we read it. And you have to be well-grounded as a believer, honestly. You really do. To read things like a grimoire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is an incantation book.
Yeah, and that was one that I actually did a little kind of
You feel dirty, honestly. I do. I feel spiritually dirty when I get in stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's a peek into what... There are people around the world that read those things and they devour them because they believe that they're going to get power through them. And very, very sad that people are so deceived. In fact, I was telling you a story about a television program. I love finding new shows I can watch on Roku that have lots of shows because I want to sometimes just sit down and spend a whole day watching a new show. This one was true crime, which is something that I find really interesting because it gives me an insight into the human psyche, especially the dark side of such, and whether or not things are influenced by dark powers. Mm-hmm. We'll put it that way. The show is called The Nightmare Next Door, and it's a true crime show that was on the ID channel. And how far are we going?
Oh, I was just checking levels. We're about 35 minutes
in. Oh, good for us. This show takes a look at small town crime and, you know, big crime like murders. And the story was a young woman in a very small eastern town, 800 people or so, who lived on Main Street and was found murdered in her home. Her throat had been slashed so deeply that she had nearly been beheaded. Turned out she had left her side door open, and this was very common practice in this small town. The show takes a long time in finally revealing the killer, but it turned out to be a truck driver. And this truck driver had been doing this in small towns throughout the Northeast and as far down into South Carolina. He would go into areas where he could just at night stealthily try doors in these small towns because he knew that many people didn't lock their doors. And when he found a door that was open, he would go in and you know, reenact. And this is what's horrific. He was reenacting scenes from a video that he was obsessed with. And this is the kind of video that probably weren't that many copies of it made, but those few copies probably sold for a great deal of money because it targeted a very specific niche in demographics. People who love to hunt. In fact, the name of the show was Hunting for Humans.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed a man who did the very thing that this truck driver was doing. He went from small town to small town and was slicing the throats of young women.
Hmm.
Just to kill them. Just for the thrill. And I put that in quotes because to me that is just horrific that they would find this thrilling. Is for the thrill of the kill. of seeing blood gushing. And this gets into the notion of bloodletting mm-hmm. in the supernatural realm. You've done some study on this. What is the power behind the shedding of blood?
To be honest, I'm not really sure what it is, but there must be some, because God not only prohibited the shedding of blood, human blood, by other humans, he also said that there would be a reckoning required for any animal that shed human blood.
I think that's something that I hadn't heard until, hadn't recognized until you said it to me the other day, and I'm really glad you repeated that.
Yeah, it was God talking to Noah, I believe. I will have to look this up here.
Well, when we were talking to Rob Skiba last week, and I've seen a few notes on Facebook, et cetera, where people are asking about last week's PID show. Did we have one? We did.
Yeah.
We actually did a Google Plus Hangout with Rob Skiba, and we talked with him about his current project, his new book. And sadly, the connection wasn't as robust as we would love to have had it in a few spots. So there was the occasional dropout in his communication.
Yeah.
We will be talking with him again, or at least you will be on VFTB sure. sometime in the next few weeks. But there was one last week, and you even took the audio and posted
it as a
podcast. The audio's
been posted as an MP3, so
if you
RSS
missed
feed.
It, go look again if you yeah. missed last week's. It's really worth it. And the reason I bring up Rob Skiba is because he mentioned that. Mm-hmm. He mentioned the question that he was having about whether or not part of the reason that blood is so special to the Lord is because, as far as humans are concerned, it contains DNA aspects. It contains mm-hmm. DNA signatures that signify that we are human. There's something very, very special about humanity. And mm-hmm. we got into that as well in another Google Hangout that you and I participated in about transhumanism. And we had, the gentleman's name that was on.
Wesley J. Smith.
Thank mm-hmm. you very much. Please forgive me, Wes, for getting your name. Look, this morning, I am currently the lay leader at our church. And this morning when we had the offering going, I asked a gentleman to pray. And I called him Chris, and his name's Jim. And he just looked at me, and I had to ask him over and over. And finally, his son said, "Dad, I think she means you." Oh, so please, my brain doesn't always remember things correctly, so forgive me for that, Wes. But his question was a good one. Are humans unique? That has to be the first question when you discuss transmuting the human condition.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, blood, there are special properties connected to blood, even in the animal kingdom. It was Genesis 9 that I was thinking of, and going back to it, I'll just read the relevant verse here from this is the NIV translation. But you must not eat meat that has its lifeblood in it. And for your lifeblood, I will surely demand an accounting. I will demand an accounting from every animal, and from each human being too. I will demand an accounting for the life of another human being. Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed. For the image of God, in the image of God, has God made mankind.
Was this before or after Cain killed Abel?
This is to Noah, so this was after.
Oh, sorry. You said Genesis 9, and I couldn't remember what
it was. Yeah.
Don't have that in front of me.
Yeah. Again, don't eat meat with the blood still in it because, the blood is the life. Mm-hmm. But in particular, human blood was not to be shed. And even from animals that shed human blood, according to Genesis 9:5, God would demand an accounting for every animal that shed human blood. So, yeah, there is something unique about human blood, but something about blood in general that has some properties, which I presume, I don't know, but I presume that's why there was the shedding of blood was required for the remission of sin. And in the Old Testament, under the Old Covenant, it was the sacrifice of an animal. Mm-hmm. I mean, going all the way back to the garden. I mean, when God presented Adam and Eve with skins, he had to kill animals in order to get the skins.
Yes.
And it's very likely
that it was a lamb that he killed.
And under the new covenant, Jesus Christ substituted for the sacrifice of the animals. It was his blood that needed to be shed. Without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin.
Amen.
And why that is, I don't know. I didn't make the rule. God's game, God's rules.
Well, animals kill other animals all the time.
Yeah.
And they surely consume blood as they are doing so.
Yeah.
doesn't see it. I didn't hear anything in there about animals consuming the blood of other animals.
No.
Rob Skiba's question in our talk with him last week was, is there some reason why humans are not allowed to consume the blood of other humans or other animals? Could it have something to do with the possibility that doing so changes you in some way? And I'm going to get into a spiritual aspect of that that Rob Skiba didn't mention, but it does come to my mind. And that is this notion of the Wendigo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That whatever you eat gives you the strength, and some, you know, tribes believed the appearance of that animal or person.
Well, as I understood the legend, it related to eating another human, mm-hmm. and it would also then instill in you an unquenchable hunger. Basically, mm-hmm. we had to keep eating more and more. There's a very, call it darkly humorous film. About the legend of the Wendigo called,
Ravenous.
Ravenous, thank you. I was going to say insatiable. Robert Carlyle. Jeffrey Jones. The young actor who was...
David Arquette
is in it. And
then another actor that
Guy Pearce.
Yes.
And essentially it's based on the legend of the Wendigo. Robert Carlyle is magnificent, but again, it's very, very dark humor. If you don't appreciate, you know, dark humor, don't watch. But
even if you don't watch that, and again, we have very strange tastes when it comes to, we do appreciate dark humor.
Yeah.
But read about the legend of the Wendigo. It's pretty interesting. But there is a cousin legend to that called the Skinwalker. And it mm-hmm. can relate to an old woman or an old medicine man or woman who puts on the skin of an animal and becomes that animal. We've seen stories like that in the X-Files and many of those other kinds of shows that take on the supernatural world. But there's a cousin, like I say, it's a cousin to that Wendigo story that it also could be that you have consumed the flesh of this animal and you become that animal.
Hmm.
And it gets into a werewolf story and all mm-hmm. of these stories of supernatural human events that seem to mix animal and human. And that's where we get into the transhumanism portion of that. And that is something that God has forbidden.
Right, right.
It is supposed to be everything is to be according to its own kind.
And yet,
humanity is very, very unique.
And we see the glorification of this with a lot of the entertainment aimed at young people.
Exactly, and it goes way back. I mean, Animorphs comes to mind, but yeah. That may not have been one of the first cartoon ones that glorified this notion of humans and animals combined,
mm-hmm. or just being a. You know, somehow more than human. I mean,
yeah.
The X-Men comics were introduced back in the early 60s, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I have seen opinions written that we're more than human now by using the internet that we're talking to many of you on right now.
We've somehow,
all of you, in fact, we're talking.
You're enhanced.
We're enhanced. Some claim that even just by having eyeglasses on your face that you're enhanced, which gets me back to this morning at church. I couldn't find my glasses. I'm standing there talking to this wonderful congregation and saying, I don't have my glasses. And as I was saying that, I thought, they're looking right at me and there are glasses on my face. I know that. And they're all thinking, she's crazy. And of course, I had on my old glasses because I couldn't find my new ones, but so I couldn't see.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
I needed to be enhanced
in terms of enhancement when the enhancement of our cognitive abilities, which is part of the goal of the Singularitans, just looking at somebody and saying, hey, "Is that her real brain, or do you think she's had work done?" Oh, well.
We could go on to the Doctor Who episode where the not-so-bright assistant is absorbed into the computer, saved, so to speak, because from the Vashta Narada.
Mm-hmm.
And she became super intelligent inside the computer because it had moved her IQ a decimal place or two.
Right. When she was saved, the computer, in saving her personality and...
she was no longer beautiful, but she was very intelligent.
Yeah, neural patterns. Yeah, yeah. Right. She was a model, but she was, you know...
Yeah, so she was enhanced.
Yeah. Yeah, missed the decimal point, made all the difference. Well, speaking of... we were talking about the supernatural interactions here. There's one that hit close to home that kind of missed. There was a story that was published about a week ago about our Republican senator here from Illinois, U.S. Senator Mark Kirk. And then thanks to the Extraordinary Intelligence website for posting this story. Mark Kirk, about a year ago, suffered a stroke, and he's been working to recover for the entire year. He just returned to Congress this past week after a year of rehabilitation. But he said that what he experienced when he suffered the stroke was no, you know, white light at the end of a tunnel or anything like that. What he did see was three angels standing at the foot of his bed. And this is the story he tells the reporter from the Daily Herald in the Chicago area. "You want to come with us?" And Kirk's response was, "No, I'll hold off." And, you know, that was
what did they look like? Does he describe them?
Looking through the rest of the story here.
They weren't small gray with large eyes, were they?
Nope, not seeing it. In fact, they didn't really... Didn't go into that anymore, and they basically said, well, he admits it might have just been a dream. And it might have been.
Well, it may have been.
It may
yes.
have been a false vision from the enemy, or who knows? It might have been.
Angels.
You don't know. But the article says, awakening from what he says might have been a dream, a side effect of medication, or a near-death experience. He doesn't know how to classify this. He found himself lying in a hospital bed at Northwestern Memorial Hospital's intensive care unit. So apparently he had a blocked artery that required him to have to relearn to walk and talk, and is still affected some movement on his left side, although he is speaking clearly now, although more slowly than before, and he is walking again. But, I mean, glad to hear that he has recovered to the point where he's returned to work.
What's his district?
He's the state of Illinois. He's a representative, United States Senator.
Oh, I thought you said he was a congressman.
No, he's the anti-Durbin. Senator Dick Durbin. We're sorry about that, America. He is, and Durbin is from Southern Illinois. So he got so liberal from being here in Southern Illinois.
That makes no sense.
Don't. No.
Well, we had a representative from the St. Louis area that was extremely liberal, and we could never figure out because Gephardt's district was so incredibly, you know, conservative.
It was, but it was dominated by unions. The Jefferson County area that he covered included the big Chrysler plant there in Fenton.
Yes.
And also a Ford plant. So UAW was very influential in his district. But he was much more conservative before he decided to run for president. He was anti-abortion until he decided he wanted to be president.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Many union members, especially when you get into areas that are away from metropolitan areas, like the coal miners union, for example, those folks are typically a lot more conservative than the Democratic Party at the national level. And yet they maintain party loyalty for the most part. I think they're may have been some break in that, especially in West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky, with the Obama administration's approach toward the coal industry in recent years. I can tell you just from personal experience now, driving around Southern Illinois, where coal is a very big player, that the union miners down here were very much opposed to the reelection of President Obama. Regardless of which side the union said they were going to be on, the guys who were fighting for their jobs and their livelihoods were not happy about reelecting the president. So,
speaking of socialist presidents or socialist leaders, and he does actually refer to his upbringing and his influences as being heavily socialist. I mean, I'm not calling a name that he wouldn't recognize as being part of his persona. I watched a show the other day called A Very British Coup. Hmm. I think it's from the 80s, and you can find it on, I think I found it on Netflix. It is really good. A three-parter based on a book, and it's a guy, very, you know, blue-collar guy from, you know, small town that becomes the prime minister. And he is an avowed socialist. His father was a socialist. His grandfather was a socialist. And they're proud to be so. And he calls everybody comrade, even the press. It's pretty good. But his approach to politics and the entrenched right-wing patrician class of mm-hmm. Great Britain who figure out ways to take him down and eventually do. And much of it is tied to their counterparts in the United States. Mm. One of the first things the prime minister wanted to do was to kick the U.S. out, close the U.S. Army bases, military bases. Mm-hmm. That didn't fly with the American president.
No. And I wonder how well it would fly if we started seeing requests like that from other places around the world. You know, Germany, where we still have got bases 60 years, 70 years after World War II.
Exactly. So. Exactly. The truth is that when the United States goes into a country and establishes military units and bases, do you really think we're going to leave?
But we're the good guys. Are we the baddies?
Skulls. Hands.
Yeah. We mentioned Wesley J. Smith a little earlier. And by the way, I noticed on his blog at First Things, which is linked from the National Review online website, that he's been named to some like encyclopedia of kooks by some left-wing organization.
Well, congratulations, Wes. It's high time you made that list.
His main complaint about being named to the list was that they used an old photo, you know, from 10 years ago. He said, hey, fellas, I've shaved since then. but he put out his prediction for 2013 and the year in bioethics, his predictions of what he sees coming. And I think it's worth touching on very quickly because his list from 2012 was pretty accurate. He predicted, for example, that in 2012, we would not see a repeal of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And he was right about that. Now, since it's not likely to be repealed in 2013 and most of the law not going into effect until 2014, it's going to seem like a quiet year this year on the Obamacare front. He thinks that that is going to be a bit deceptive, that court dockets around the country will be backing up with lawsuits attacking certain applications of the law. Even though the Supreme Court did find the Affordable Care Act to be constitutional, the fight, he thinks, is going to be over freedom of religion. If you'll notice, when the Obama administration or where President Obama talks about freedom of religion, they don't actually say freedom of religion. They say freedom to worship. There's a difference. You can go and worship just as long as you don't do this or that. And
yes.
You can worship however you want. But if you're going to employ people who work for you, you have to guarantee that they've got access to, you know,
in other words, you're free to go to church on Sunday if you want to, but don't be putting this faith to action in your daily life.
That's right. You're still going to have to provide free access to contraception, sterilization surgeries, morning after pills, and so forth. So that's going to be a big year in 2013, a big story in 2013, according to Wesley J. Smith. Churches, synagogues, mosques, other houses of worship will have to comply with the rule, he thinks, or the government will force them to try to comply with the rule. Religious organizations or private business owners with personal religious objections to the rule will all be affected by this particular aspect of the Affordable Care Act. So he predicts the Obama administration will not offer any significant relief from free birth control to non-church religious organizations. He believes that many dissenting religious organizations will sue the government seeking relief from the rule based on the First Amendment, and the U.S. Supreme Court will accept an appeal to determine whether private business owners are protected under the terms of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Business owners such as the guy who owns Hobby Lobby.
Right, exactly. And he doesn't see this being decided until 2014. He also sees this to be a very active year in assisted suicide and euthanasia news internationally. He predicts that the practice of Belgian euthanasia will grow increasingly extreme. In fact, he just posted a link to a story here recently about a pair of twins in their mid-40s who have been deaf since birth, learned that they were likely going to go blind as their eyesight was beginning to degenerate.
Right.
And they were allowed, doctors were allowed to give them lethal injections because they just couldn't bear the thought of not being able to see one another again, these fraternal twins. Or identical twins, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, yeah. That sounds more like an identical twin.
Yeah, identical twins. But in Belgium, apparently, this is becoming more and more common. He predicts it will continue to increase.
Well, you read headline to me a little while ago from Quebec. That's about assisted suicide.
Yeah, Quebec is apparently intending to redefine suicide as a genuine medical treatment. Yeah, so we're seeing it hit on this side of the pond as well. The Netherlands, he predicts, will permit euthanasia for the elderly who are, quote, tired of life, end quote. And doctors will increasingly be willing to euthanize those with mental illnesses, which is already legal in the Netherlands. In the United Kingdom, he believes Parliament will not legalize assisted suicide despite widespread agitation to permit it. Neither will Australia.
Let's back up for a second. In the Netherlands, mm-hmm. You can euthanize someone who has a mental illness?
That is correct.
How do they define mental illness?
That's the scary question, isn't it?
Because over here, there are some who would like to call Christians mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. He predicts several U.S. state legislators will see intense assisted suicide legalization efforts. All will fail with the possible exception of Vermont, he predicts. He thinks that this year we'll see the High Court in British Columbia ruling that there's a constitutional right to assisted suicide, forcing Canada's Supreme Court to take up the case, with the ultimate decision not until 2014. Other issues he predicts for 2013 in the field of bioethics, a concerted effort mounted in at least one state to outlaw human cloning. It will fail because of heated opposition by scientists, universities, biotech businesses, and the media. He believes that induced pluripotent stem cell research will continue to move forward at a very fast pace. He believes that Geron's defunct embryonic stem cell program will be purchased by another company and the human trials it started recommenced. Another breakthrough toward learning how to engage in full human somatic cell nuclear transfer cloning will be announced. Wesley J. Smith predicts that adult stem cell successes will continue in human trials and still be generally underreported by the media. State attempts to restrict funding of Planned Parenthood will ultimately fail in the courts, he predicts. He also believes that gestational surrogacy for pay will continue to be a growth industry, especially in developing countries. In other words, rent-a-wombs.
Yeah.
And for him, his final prediction, Wesley J. Smith writes, an issue will arise in 2013 that no one expected. Even I, your humble expert prognosticator, will be surprised. So we'll see how he does come November. But it appears if he is as correct as he's been the last couple of years in forecasting what will take place in bioethics, we're seeing a continued drive towards the erosion of the concept of human exceptionalism, the drive toward human cloning. And an increased emphasis on utilitarianism as the ultimate gauge of the value of human life. Disturbing, but not unexpected.
No, that's true. Sadly true. Well, good for him. He's been right in the past.
Yep. Well, we will... keep your eyes on the website, PIDradio.com. We'll have show notes there with links to some of these articles. Also, the PID Radio Cafe at Facebook for discussion of these articles. And, of course, more notes as I finally get back to a regular schedule of interviews at A View from the Bunker at VFTB.net.
This whole holiday time, this Christmas season, it just really, it takes us right off our schedules.
Yeah, and work.
We spend most of the time in a sugar-induced coma.
That's right, sugar and caffeine. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone. say it loud and clear.